So I'm calling to order the meeting of the House Early Childhood Finance and Policy Division. Apologies for starting a few minutes late again today. Let's start by taking the roll, Madam Clerk.
Representative Pinto, Chair.
Present.
Representative Katiza Watun, Vice Chair.
Present.
Representative Franson. Representative Bonner. Representative Damath.
Present.
Representative Heinzman. Representative Morrison. Representative Pryor.
Present.
Representative Wasilick.
Present.
Representative West.
So we do not have a quorum, so we will handle the approval of the minutes a little bit later in the agenda. So we're going to start with our first bill of the session. In honor of that, I actually brought treats, so we can distribute that. We can get those distributed when the page gets a chance. And so why don't we call up Representative Sandstead to hear our first bill, House File 837. And hello, Representative Sandstead.
Good morning.
Good morning. So it's my intention to lay this bill over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill, and we'll be able to talk about that a little bit later. May I have a motion to get Representative Sandstead's bill before the division? Oh, you know what? Actually, good point. We need a quorum to move it anyway. So, well, I guess we could have the motion, but in any case, why don't we'll have the discussion on the bill, and then we can go from there. Well, we won't actually be able to be taking action because we're going to lay it over anyway. So Representative Sandstead, why don't we begin with your bill, and if you can please describe House File 837 to us, and we can bring up whatever testifiers you have as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning.
Good morning.
Before you have House File 837. I want to thank you for the opportunity to present this bill. House File 837 delivers a much-needed increase in the amount of state aid for school health and development screenings. These screenings are critical for every student entering public school, and they cover a wide variety of areas, including hearing, vision, development, and identification of risk factors that may influence learning as well as other components. State reimbursements to school districts for these types of screenings has not been increased since 2008. My bill increases these amounts by 25%, from $75 to $94 for three-year-olds, from $50 to $63 for four-year-olds, from $40 to $50 for 5- and 6-year-olds prior to kindergarten, and from $30 to $38 for students screened in the first 30 days of public pre-K. We know that the financial struggles of our school districts are very serious, and important services like these are critical. I feel that we have the responsibility to take on the cost of these screenings. The bill includes an open appropriation, which I hope at some point will be replaced with a very robust amount for this service. Or for this fund. And with that, I'd like to invite up my testifiers, Christine Yerkamp and Mary Yackley.
Okay. And whomever is going to go first can just introduce yourself and then please begin, and then we'll move to the second testifier.
Thank you, Sir Chair, members of the committee. My name is Christine Yerkamp, and I'm the Executive Director of Community Education for Robbinsdale Area Schools. And I also represent Minnesota Community Education Association, and I thank you for listening to the importance of this issue about increasing funding for early childhood screening. It's important to understand the purpose of early childhood screening is to identify potential health and development delays in children as young as 3 years of age. This allows us to assess children's growth and development and provide for them special services such as early childhood special education if necessary. If left unidentified, these delays could result in a gap in kindergarten readiness. It was noted by the evaluation report on early childhood programs of the Office of the Legislative Auditor that the rates do not match the actual costs of school districts to operate early childhood screening. As mentioned before, the rate has been flat for 10 years. The report recommended the legislature should consider reviewing the statutory reimbursement rates for early childhood health and development screening. It's indicated that the state's reimbursement covered on average 73% of screening costs statewide in fiscal year 2016. Statewide, school districts spent an additional $1.3 million that year beyond the state reimbursements allocated for their programs. This cross-subsidy accounts for the direct costs school districts incur to conduct early childhood screenings and provide outreach and follow-up to families. In Robbinsdale, in the year of 2018, we had in excess $36,000 of expenses over revenues. Our goal is to partner with parents to ensure they understand the importance of early childhood screening and how it can help their children's growth and development. A community education department is reimbursed when a child completes an early childhood screening. However, it does not cost cover the cost for outreach and follow-up with parents. We incur additional expenses each time we rescreen. We follow up with parents on referrals for vision and screening with a pediatrician. We refer children to an early childhood special education evaluation, and when we assist with community resources to meet the family's basic needs. We also community education invests time and resources in outreach efforts to educate parents as to why the early childhood screening is important. An increase in the early childhood screening reimbursement rate will help community education cover the cost of screening as well as the outreach and follow-up with families. So I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. And would you mind saying your last name again?
Wehrkamp.
Would you mind spelling it just for a minute?
Wehrkamp.
Thank you. Good, and so we'll move on to the second testifier, and I think the members, we can ask questions after the second testifier. So please, if you can state your name as well, and then please proceed.
Committee Chair Pinto and members of the committee, my name is Mary Yackley, Y-A-C-K-L-E-Y. I supervise health services in the St. Paul Public Schools, and that includes nurses and health paraprofessionals who facilitate early childhood screening of 3-, 4-, and 5-year-olds. We focus our outreach on 3- and 4-year-olds and children of color. We partner with Head Start, healthcare providers WIC, and child care providers to reach families of young children. It is my 8th year overseeing early childhood screening. During that time, reimbursement from MDE has supported about 1/3 of the cost to screen over 3,700 students or 3-, 4-, and 5-year-olds annually. The cost of one screening in St. Paul Public Schools is about $165, and we attempt, while we call this a health screening, we attempt to dig a little deeper around things like hearing, vision, and health concerns that are identified that we know will impact learning. ECS is a state-mandated requirement. The reimbursement rate does not fully fund screening. In St. Paul, the difference is made up by funds from my department, Student Health and Wellness, and the department that oversees pre-K and early learning. One of the tough trade-offs that I make in staffing is staffing school health offices and staffing early childhood screening. We work hard to meet the needs of students with chronic health conditions and care for episodic injuries and illnesses. We also want to implement ECS with fidelity. If ECS is funding improves, dollars dedicated to the funding of health office staffing would not compete with ECS. Thank you for your time and your consideration of increasing funding to early childhood screening.
Thank you, Ms. Yackley, and thanks. My kids attend the St. Paul Public Schools, and thanks for taking care of them in particular. Members, do we have questions for either the testifiers or Representative Sandstead? I want to point members' attention to there's a one-page developmental screening handout in your packets that was put together by House Research that provides some nice background on the program. I guess I have a couple questions. How are the amounts in the bill set? Because it sounds like if it's, you know, more than $100 cost per child, and this maximum cost for a child screened at age 3 is $94, how are those amounts chosen? You may have a phone a friend on the side too. I can't quite tell.
I'll phone a friend.
The friend says, Mr. Chair, that it was the amount calculated in the OLA deficit, or in the report from the OLA.
The report on early childhood screening saying these are amounts that in most districts that it costs. I guess then is what I'm seeing some nods.
Yes.
Okay, and how is that linked to the blank amount in lines 2.10 and 2.11? In other words, because I guess I would assume that. Once you set an amount per child, then it should just be that there's a total that adds up to the cost per child times the number of children screened. Are you anticipating, Representative Sandstead or the folks who brought this forward with you, that that amount will be prorated if there's a smaller amount in the blank appropriation? I don't know if you understand my question,
I think I do, and yes, that would be my understanding. Obviously, the dollar amounts that, you know, are straightforward increase, but then I think the blank piece is for basically any other expenses.
Representative Sandstedt, so I guess, but is that something separate in that, in lines 2.8 to 2.11, separate from the screening aid that's listed on the front of the, on the first page of the bill? I guess I would think that they're the same, but...
Mr. Chair, I would think that they're also the same dollar amounts.
Okay, and it looks like House Research may have some insight to provide on this.
Mr. Chair, members, so the screening aid that's identified is the reimbursement amounts in Section 1, and then Section 2 would be the appropriation of general fund dollars for screening purposes. So if the appropriation were to stay at base at a higher rate, it would mean fewer kids would be able to be screened. If the appropriation were increased, it could be increased that amount to reflect this sort of the same number of kids, which would involve a higher appropriation, just to kind of give you a sense of how the dollar amounts could end up being filled in on the developmental screening aid appropriations.
And so, Mr. Burris, or maybe somebody else in House Research, do we know at these lower rates right now, is the state reimbursing for all children being screened at the lower rates, or right now is there some rationing going on, if you understand my question?
Mr. Chair and members, this might be a better question for the testifiers, but at the amount right now, the districts are being reimbursed at these levels, and I understand that it's not enough. So they're having to make up the difference with other funds.
And it looks like Ms. Werkamp maybe has something to add on this.
Sir Chair, members of the committee, I can tell you over the last 3 years in Ramsdale Area Schools, we had to use school readiness dollars, any fee-based programming, to offset the lack of state resources to cover the expenses. So for 2018, that came up to $36,169 that we had to pull from other funding sources to offset that expense. It does not come from the state in any other form of reimbursement. I can tell you that the expenses over time, as we are able to find more and more children and get them in, that has increased while the revenue has stayed stagnant. So, for example, in 2016, the revenue that Robbinsdale received was $59,000, a little over $59,000. 2017, $57,000. 2018, $56,000. Again, with those fundings decreasing with the age, if you screen more at 4 than you do at 3, you have a less revenue coming in, but your expense is the same. So your expenses are going to increase depending on what children you get in when you get them in.
Okay. And so it sounds like, if I'm understanding you right, there's a challenge of both that the amount is too low, but then also the total amount being appropriated is also not sufficient as well. I see nods. Any other questions from any members or any further discussion? And any member of the public who wishes to comment on the bill? And seeing no discussion, okay, with that, we do now have a quorum, and I guess we do need a motion to put the bill in front of us. So if I can have a motion to have the bill laid over possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
So moved.
Okay, Representative Pryor moves that. And we've now had the discussion on the bill. Is there anything further from members? No, so then with that, we will I'll lay the bill over for possible inclusion. And thank you, Representative Sandstedt, for coming before us, and testifiers as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And with that, we will, since we now do have a quorum, if I can have a motion to approve the minutes from our February 7th meeting.
I so moved.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. Appreciate it. Any additions or corrections to the minutes, members? And seeing none, all in favor of approval of the minutes of the February 7th meeting, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? And with that, we have some minutes that have been approved, February 7th. So we'll move on to two bills from Representative Cotiza Witoon. I guess we'll start with House File 825, and so you can head on up to the testifier table. And feel free to have your testifiers join you if you'd like. Representative Cotiza Witoon. And And Representative Cotiza Witun moves approval of House File 825 to be referred to Ways and Means via House Health and Human Services Finance. And so you have made that motion, Representative Cotiza Witun. And so with that, can you please describe House File 825 to us and introduce your testifiers?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm grateful to be able to present and carry these two bills this year. It's a set of bills, the bills that we're going to be hearing today, 825 and 908. So my testifiers may speak to the bills kind of holistically, if that's all right with you.
Yes, okay. Yeah, please.
Thank you. So 825 is $225,000 of appropriations to establish a pilot program to two women-run cooperative child care businesses, specifically in low-income urban areas. There will be reports mandated, and the ultimate goal is to review the program and expand across the state. So specifically, as a new mother who jumped overnight into the world of early childhood and child care specifically, and as a businesswoman, knowing the difficulties facing startup businesses, especially the disparity in ownership between women-owned organizations and the lower revenue possibility in the child care industry, I think this program has the potential to lift up female entrepreneurs and serve children and families not only in urban areas but across the state. And so I would like to thank Eileen Wyatt, CEO of Women Venture, and Nancy Johnson, Child Care Co-op Manager at Women Venture, and allow them to speak a little bit more to the program.
Good. And so please, if you can state and spell your name, and then please proceed with your testimony.
Eileen Wyatt, W-Y-A-T-T.
Great. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Cotiza Witun, thank you so much for the opportunity to come and talk with you about our work at Women Venture and specifically about our work in the child care space. So for those of you who are not familiar with Women Venture, we're an SBA Women's Business Center. We've been around for 41 years. And last year we served 1,100 women and supported 206 businesses that further supported 900 jobs, paying an average wage of $20 an hour. One of the really exciting pieces of our work is that our women business owners paid themselves $26 an hour, which is somewhat unheard of when you look at women business owners across the country and in the state of Minnesota. So how do we do it? We have a really consistent approach. Whether someone comes in and wants to just consider owning a business or if she wants to scale her business exponentially, we really use what we call the four pillars of women's economic development. So we do very in-depth training. We provide expert advice, and we do that both through our staff, and we have a very strong contingent of expert volunteers that also support our clients. We are a micro lender, and we also really connect our clients with capital, and we provide an intentional community of support, which is really important for women business owners. So how did we end up in the child care space? We kept meeting women who are going through our really in-depth small business training program, who are working in very low-wage, service-based business. So that means cleaning, home health care, personal care attendants, and child care. And that really bothered us that they weren't converting to entrepreneurship. They were working really hard, creating great business plans, doing everything we asked them to do. So why weren't they converting? It was really about wealth. So it really takes wealth to build a business. And so we really took it on as a challenge to find a model across the country that could really give these women access to small business ownership. And we really landed on the cooperative ownership model. So this is a worker-owner concept. The concept is that the profits from the business actually go up into wages, and the women collectively own the business together and run it together. And so we embarked on that journey, and my colleague Nancy Johnson is really going to dig into the mechanics of that program. It's been supported really significantly, start with a lead gift from the Kellogg Foundation, Northwest Area Foundation, as well as McKnight. So there's a lot of interest in this work, and we've learned a lot in the last year from the last time we were in front of the legislature about how to do this work. But the other thing that we came across, and I want to back up, so why did we choose childcare? Because there are, as I mentioned, many industries that really have this model. Well, to me, the reason that we chose childcare is the way that we direct our clients. So what does the community need? Well, we have a childcare crisis. We have a significant number of unfilled slots. So we know there's demand. So how can we really help fill that demand through a business solution? Because that's really the work we do. We're really focused on helping women start and grow profitable businesses. As we went through this journey, we also had a lot of clients in our loan program, as well as went through our training program, that weren't really prepared to run a childcare business. So what we theorized is that really these women need to understand what we call the iron triangle. So in childcare, it can be profitable, but there are three things you have to do. You have to charge market rates for the market that you live in. So that could really differ, even based on your zip code. You have to be full, and you have to collect. So really building your business in that way and evaluating whether or not it can be profitable. And then all the mechanics of running a business, a childcare business, have become far more complex. They're a lot more regulated than they were 10 years ago. So it's really making sure that women are prepared to open, to follow the rules, and to track their business finances and understand them. So we really wanted to create a program called Small Business Essentials, but very specifically focused on childcare, because we kept seeing this lack of business training in this work. And we felt so passionately about it that we wrote a lot of grants and we got a lot of no's. But we kept going because we really believe that it's really a critical piece of solving this problem in the community. So very recently, St. Paul Foundation agreed, and they have supported a pilot that we will do in St. Paul this year to really begin this work. So we really believe that this is about business and that there is a business solution to the childcare crisis in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. So we'll move to the second testifier, then we'll open up for questions. So please provide your name and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nancy Johnson. I've actually worked on the childcare side for over 40 years and am recently at Women Venture. And the reason that I wanted this job when I heard about it was that this is the first time that we've had, I think, a hopeful business model for actually addressing one of the most intractable problems that the childcare industry has that has led to the crisis that we have. And the crisis is that more people are leaving than are going in. But why is that, if it's a good thing to do? Well, for childcare teachers over the last 40 years have barely made any increases at all, even though in the last 25 years, studies have looked at the increase in fees, and parents are paying a lot more money for childcare. But that's not going into the workers. So you heard our executive director, Elaine Wyatt, talk about some of the problems that we were seeing at Women Venture, and included with the fact that women were going through the business classes and then not converting to starting their business. We also had women who were low-income women, who are the women we really want to be able to serve, and they weren't able to even raise enough collateral to get a loan. And to start a center, it's very difficult to self-finance that. So there was another reason why that we needed to have a different business model. To add some more context here, the median wage for childcare workers in centers in Minnesota in 2017 was $11.27 an hour. That only went up 1% in the last 4 years. And for center directors, this one really surprised me, the median wage actually decreased over the last few years, 5%. So something in the business mechanics of this aren't working for the people who actually do the service. So we looked at as Elaine said, we're looking at the worker co-op model, because what that model does is it changes the game in terms of ownership, and it puts it in the hands of the workers so that they can make decisions. One worker, one vote, very democratically run, but in order to do that, they also need to really understand business. So we need to find and recruit women who either maybe have run a family childcare business and want to grow their business, have a waiting list, but aren't making a very much money where they live. Or we need to help businesses who want to start a center because they can see the opportunity for themselves to grow in their leadership skills and understand business. So our program started actually training a year ago. We recruited a group of low-income women. All of them were women of color. All of them had never run a business before. Many of them had full-time jobs. All of them were working. All of them had children. And they were going every Saturday for 20 weeks, all Saturday morning, to learn the co-op business model. These women were dedicated and just determined that this was going to happen. And I think what we learned from the class was that there's so much to learn that we also need to have business incubation for women. So part of our model takes what you would actually create if you get, for instance, a business plan model or a template. And then we'll work with them in this next cohort to actually finish that during the class. So we know from our first group of women who all graduated from the class, and now three of the co-op groups are looking for space, kind of a big lift, but we think they'll be able to do it. And they continue to get technical assistance from us. But for the next co-op group, we have also recruited low-income women again. All of them are women of color in their communities of need, and we'll incubate them right with the class so that when they end, they will have everything they need to start and go through licensing. So I'll take questions.
Okay, thank you. Did Representative Heitzman have a question? Looks like he does. Okay, Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No problem.
I especially appreciated your recognition of the testifiers' recognition of the impact in the last 10 years. Last 10 years, my district has seen a loss of over half of our providers. And I see this is targeted outside of my district, but I do have a couple of questions as to kind of how this is going to work. And Representative Kizawatun, I'm wondering, for example, interest rates, payments, how are those handled? What's a typical interest rates? And then when the payback is made, is that going back to the general fund or back to the organization to reinvest in terms of additional loans? How does that work, Representative?
Representative Kizawatun or the testifiers.
Thank you for that question, Representative Heitzman. I'm hopeful that Elaine could speak to the repayment of the loans or what the microloan situation is directly from Women Venture.
Mr. Ms. Chair, Wyatt. Members of the committee, we do have a robust loan program. We charge rates based on the credit profile of a client. So that means anywhere between 8.5% and 11% interest. Typical loan is about 5 years, and any of those funds that are repaid then go back into the community. That may seem like a high rate, but many of our clients are credit compromised, also have credit issues, and so really it's a pretty standard rate for a subprime loan program.
Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When you say back into the community, what are we talking about?
Ms. Wyatt.
So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, so we have a revolving loan fund. So as additional women come to us, whether it's for childcare or other businesses, we underwrite their loans, execute a loan, and then they make payments, and that those funds revolve.
Okay. Representative Heitzman. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kizawatun, just specifically, I see, because I mentioned earlier, this is something obviously that wouldn't necessarily impact it in my district, but how do you define urban area? How are you working out those details?
Ms. Wyatt.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, right now we are really focused on these two pilots because of our funding stream. One of our ways of work that's very consistent at Women Venture and a directive in our strategic plan is that anything that we create can be replicated easily in another community. And that is really our goal, and for both of these programs, is that we create them, we refine them and we document them and share them with the rest of the community in Minnesota, whether that's suburban or rural, that we really create a solution that can be shared holistically. And so I would say in particular with the cooperative, I see that as a three-year incubation. It is a very complex model. I have every confidence that we will execute it and continue to iterate it before I think it's really ready for prime time. The small business training program, I really see us as being able to refine that within a year and have that out to a greater marketplace.
Maybe I can just clarify that it looks like the business training program, House File 908, is not limited to urban areas, if I'm reading that right, Ms. Wyatt. I just want to, because the other one is, as Representative Heitzman said.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it is not limited to geography.
So would House File 908, those funds could be available to serve Representative Heitzman's district? Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's correct.
Okay. Representative Heitzman, anything else from you right now? Looks like no.
Or, no, unless you have the exact definition of urban area. Top of your head, Mr. Chair.
Representative Heisman, I don't. I understand why you might think, though, that that would not apply to your district. So I'm not. It sounds like the testifier is not necessarily disputing that. So, but it looks like House File 908 perhaps would, at least. Just want to make sure we clarify that. So I think Representative Franzman's next, and then prior. Representative Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. These questions are for Representative Cotizza-Wathine. So St. Paul is listed, or as had been mentioned, as a location for a pilot project. And VPK is also in the St. Paul area. Knowing that childcare cannot operate, cannot actually have a profit without those preschoolers in it, as toddlers and infants are a little expensive, right? So providers don't make money that way, right? So they need the toddlers also in there to help support that business model. Knowing that VPK is in the St. Paul pilot area, how do you see these cooperatives working out?
Representative Cotizza-Wathine.
Thank you, Representative Franzen. Great question. Many things to consider. Correct. I'm hopeful maybe Ms. Johnson would be able to speak to with your background in the childcare arena and just kind of considering this pilot program and how we might go forward in St. Paul and then to take the model elsewhere across the state.
Ms. Johnson.
Representative
Franzen.
Thank you. Sorry. You're correct that the model of childcare, particularly in centers, depends on infants and toddlers to be able to or depends on preschoolers to even out the cost because of the ratios. You need to have one adult for every four babies, one adult for every seven toddlers, and one adult for every 10 preschoolers. So you can just see the staffing costs are much greater for infants. Having said that, I am not familiar with exactly how preschool is rolling out in St. Paul. Except that it was my understanding that the recommendations are to use the quality rating system, which does recognize child care providers. It recognizes family child care providers who are high quality, recognizes centers that are high quality in the private sector, as well as school-based preschools and Head Start. So if they use that model, actually, I am hopeful that that will help the providers that we are helping to start their businesses, because they will actually be able to fill in the cracks with the waiting lists for child care subsidies, for instance. So that's.
Thank you. Representative Franzen.
Thank you. And thank you for that response. I would just, if this is what you're going to be spending tax dollars on, Representative, that I would do a little bit more research in this particular field. Now, I just heard from
Ms. Wyatt?
Ms. Johnson.
Yes. On the left, yeah. Pardon me.
From Ms. Johnson that she wasn't quite sure exactly how that would work out. But currently the VPK is taking place in the public school systems. While they are encouraged to have a mixed delivery system, that currently is a little bit murky how that looks. But the VPK is taking place in the public school systems. So the quality rating there isn't exactly applicable to this at the time, right? Okay, so there's going to be some issues with your business plan if you're not taking into consideration how VPK is going to affect, all right? And then there was the comment about the one person, one vote. Now, in family childcare, it's already one person, one vote, because you've got one person, or the wife and the spouse are the ones who are owning that business, right? And they don't have to share the profits with any other women or business owners. So why promote a cooperative with more than one person where you could be promoting family child care?
Ms. Wyatt, perhaps, or Ms. Johnson? Ms. Wyatt.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Franson, I think, you know, one of the things about that, of the women that we meet, that they don't have homes. And that was a big surprise to me. That was a piece of the inability to convert. So looking at a space option that really could accommodate a family child care, for instance, a pod model, which I believe that you're familiar with, or a way to use a home and have multiple shifts. So really the likelihood of the women that we're working with that are going to execute this in an urban setting are really going to have to buy the real estate, whether it's a home or a center or rent a center. So the concept is really how can they access entrepreneurship without the real estate asset that many of the providers that are higher income can access.
Representative Franson, if you're all that, okay. And I should probably note, as a St. Paul resident, just as I think the only one in the committee, I think this sounds terrific and be very helpful in my community. But thank you. So Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to, this is a clarifying question. We talked about it holistically, but what is the difference between the two bills?
Representative Cotizo-Witun.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. So House File 825 is an appropriation of $225,000 specifically to establish the two pilot centers. And House File 908 is $140,000 specifically appropriated for the training specific to women entrepreneurs in the childcare industry. Any further clarification?
Okay. Representative Pryor.
So thank you for the clarification. And then as we talked about the difference between the two, then these are the two pilots that we're focusing on with 825, and then the 908, then that's what you, the training that then is a product that can be taken across the state as a model for things.
Ms. Wyatt.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's correct. The intent is to be able to replicate it across the state.
And my understanding, you know, there are a number of proposals that I've seen to have grants through DEED, which I guess both of these do, right? And then through the MIFs and other proposals to really support the childcare industry. And so this seems terrific. Any other questions? Representative Damuth.
Thank you for presenting and for drawing attention to the need. I am from Greater Minnesota, and so our need for childcare is very much like any place else in the state, sometimes a little different. And what I'm hearing from my business community is that there is a need for, because of the large number of manufacturers, more of that shift work. And so as I hear the potential for a pilot, has there been any consideration given to spreading that pilot, maybe one in an urban, I know we haven't clearly defined that, but possibly one there, and then also in Greater Minnesota, because as many similarities as there are very distinct differences. Any consideration to that at this point?
Ms. Wyatt.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we talk about it all the time. Now, I came out of Girl Scouts as my background, my last role, which is all over the great state of Minnesota. And one of the things I learned there was is that that everything has to be done within community. So I really, my goal around these two programs is really to develop them and then really work with the initiative funds or the small business development centers to really deliver the product into community. When we think about rural, I really think the solution that I'm the most excited about is really a pod model, and I'm just going to describe it a little bit.
Please do.
So it's being done in Detroit Lakes, and what it is it's for women who have a home-based license. And a home-based license is just a lot easier to get and to manage. They each run their own business within a community center, but they all have, the kids are registered in all of the different businesses, so somebody can go on vacation if someone's sick, and they also share staff as well. These women have been doing this for 20 years. They've had no turnover in those businesses, with the exception of one of the owners that passed away, and that got full again, and now they're looking at doing another three businesses in a different location. So when I hear that, I see that implication both in urban and in rural, in that it is a way for women to come together, to make a living wage, to be more supported, to share, and to have a life, to be able, but also it really addresses this issue of not having a home. And who would think that that would be a huge issue, but a lot of landlords will not let you run a childcare business if you are leasing or renting from them. So we really have been working with someone that's an expert in this, really applying this concept to both a cooperative as well as a single ownership model. And we're just trying to flesh this out and have confidence that we will, as really a business solution both for urban and rural.
Representative Dame.
Another question. Thank you, Chair. I'm not as familiar with Women Venture, so thanks for giving a little bit of background on that. Can you tell me if the state has previously provided funds to Women Venture? And if so, have there been similar grants? And how has that worked?
Ms. Wyatt.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we are supported by the competitive grant program for the economic development agencies. Last year, we received the highest grant of all of the community development financial institutions in recognition of our results and our work. We were awarded a grant for a scale-up program in about 4 years ago through the Women's Economic Security Act. The focus of that work was to help women who had million-plus businesses really scale their businesses exponentially. We launched that program through a pilot. We ran it for 2 years and with some pretty incredible results. Those businesses, after 2 years, produced 80 new jobs, paying $30 an hour, accessed $7 million in capital, and paid for itself in tax revenue related to increased revenues for the businesses. We've continued that program using the competitive grant funds and also some of our other general funds that we've raised, and just launched our most recent cohort. So again, that iteration, looking at what went well, really listening to our clients, listening to our staff, and listening to the trainers that deliver the program, and continuing to iterate. So that's a great example of a pilot that we were given funds for. We've raised other funds to support it and continue to do that work in the community.
Okay. Representative Damuth, all done. Okay, Representative Franson.
Thank you. That leads me into my question. Could you provide the body with some reports of your successes or the funding that you have received from DEED or similar government agencies?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, absolutely happy to do that. We do formal reporting to DEED on a semi-annual basis, so happy to both deliver the report on the scale-up program as well as our general work.
Thank you.
And please do that. Yeah, thank you. Okay, hold on. Any other questions and any public testimony on either of these bills? Because we'll deal with the one, and then we'll deal immediately after with the second. And seeing no members of the public coming up, and anything else from any members? Oh, Representative Franson. Yes. Oh, okay, good. Okay. Okay, so then with that, Representative Cotiza Witun renews her motion for passage of House File 825 back up to Ways and Means. All in favor of approval, say aye.
Aye.
And to confirm, it'll be via HHS Finance, but we're having it go up to Ways and Means. So I heard the aye. Any opposed? None. And so congratulations, Representative Cotiza Witun. There's one down. And then Representative Cotiza Witun moves. Oh, Representative Franson, yes.
Mr. Chair, could you clarify where you're sending that bill to?
Yes, Representative Franson. So we are a division of both HHS Finance and Ed Finance. This bill came to us via HHS Finance, and it came to HHS Finance via Ways and Means. Bill's going back up to Ways and Means, and that'd be true in both of these. It goes basically through HHS Finance back to Ways and Means. Representative Franson.
It's got to go to HHS Finance first.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Franson. Why don't we, just to be on the safe side, we'll do that again. Eventually, it'll be up to Ways and Means, but I suppose it doesn't have that intermediate stop in HHS Finance. So, and thank you for the clarification. So, House Bill 825, we're going to, let me think. Maybe just to be on the safe side, let's move to reconsider. So maybe I'll rely on Representative Breyer again, because she's been so kind about that.
Thank you.
So all in favor of
so moved.
Motion to reconsider that last motion. All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay. We had that happen. Thank you. And so then Representative Khadiza Wattoon moves that House Bill 825 be passed back to HHS Finance, recognizing that then up to Ways and Means. Any discussion on that? I hear nothing further. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And that passes. And then, Representative Khadiza Wattoon, House File 908, she also moves to have that bill follow the same path as passed, go up to HHS Finance and then to Ways and Means. Any further discussion on House File 908? I'm hearing none. All in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
And anybody opposed? Hearing none. House File 908 passes as well. Congratulations, Representative Khadiza Wattoon. Many thanks to Ms. Wyatt and Ms. Johnson. A couple of housekeeping notes, members. I guess one really big one is I want to make sure that you've noted, members of the public have noted as well, that on February 22nd, we will be having a field hearing along with the Jobs and Economic Development Finance Division in St. Cloud. We're finalizing the details, but please plan on that. It'll be in the early afternoon on February 22nd. And on this topic that we've been talking quite a bit about, which is the child care crisis and related crises as well. And so be in touch with us if you have questions, and we'll certainly get the details out to members. And I think that may be – oh, and Representative Franson. Yes.
Just a housekeeping question.
Yeah.
Are you planning on doing one bill, or are you doing a bill for HHS or a bill for education?
Thank you, Representative Franson. So the plan is to do it's a division report because of how things are structured, and the plan is to do a division report to HHS Finance and a separate division report to Education Finance. That's my plan. Recognizing, and so just to confirm for members of the public who may not be aware, that we do report to both of those committees. Once the language and the funding goes up, then they'll be incorporated in their bills, and so we'll do it that way. So, Representative Franson.
I'm just in the future. Could you? When we have bills, could you just say what division so we can keep things straight?
Absolutely. Thank you, Representative Franson. So to confirm, Representative Sandstead's bill, the first bill we heard, I would anticipate would be in the education finance bill since it has to do with education in school districts. But thank you. I will endeavor to remember that, and if I forget, please remind me.
Don't worry.
Yeah. I know I can count on you, Representative
thank
Franson.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further, members? So with that, I think this is the first time we will be adjourning actually early, so a little bit of extra time. Thanks all.